We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and once again, we are here with John Clark. Hello, John.
Hiya, Andy.
And we've been talking technology all evening, so we're going to stay in that vein, but move on to a couple of new topics. So one is Google. We've already mentioned Google several times. Google is now a verb in the English language.
Isn't it crazy?
And so it is everywhere, it seems, and Google's a big, fat success and a powerful company, rivaling not just Microsoft in the computer industry, but there's talk it may rival AT&T and some of the phone companies.
It's going to be, it's the future of the web. The phone companies are trying their best to catch up. They all operated on a business model that is now out of date, and every traditional phone provider will tell you nowadays that their primary business is not offering phone service. They're all positioning themselves to become broadband internet providers, and they say, oh, incidentally, we also offer phone service too, which is just exactly what the cable companies are doing. They want to continue to deliver their television to you, but they're all positioning themselves as broadband internet providers, and they do TV, and oh yeah, they do phones as well. So Google dominates the web, as few other companies ever have. They had a really innovative way to enter the market with their public offering of their stock. They were the first company to ever auction their stock off. Now, most of the time, analysts look at the company, look at their assets, look at their business plan, and come up with an initial stock price. Not Google. They auctioned their stock, and since their initial public offering, their stock has gone up 600%. And they're perhaps as capitalized as any business could be today. They're sitting on billions of dollars in the bank.
Yeah, Microsoft may be the only company sitting on more, and now the oil companies because of the price of oil. But what's interesting, Google stock, I think they targeted $100 at the end of the first day of selling. Like if you knew how to get in and get the options before the first day, I think you got it for $100 a share. People said, that's overpriced. They bid it up to $178 by the end of the first day, and everyone said, these people are nuts. If you bought at those prices, you were going to lose your shirt. I think it closed sometime last week at $650 a share.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it might have split for all I know.
Yeah. Well, and just think about how much it could split and then how much you'd be worth over the next few years. But yeah, Google is here to stay, and Google does so many things, but they're moving into a completely different realm.
Telephony.
That's right.
One of my favorite words.
Telephony, specifically wireless telephony.
Cell phone telephony.
Right.
Yeah, so... And this is about the auctioning off of spectrum, right?
Google was successful during the past summer in lobbying the FCC to allow them, a company that's not a traditional wireless provider, to bid for electromagnetic spectrum. And the spectrum auctions that have been the purview of the wireless companies so far. And so we see a company that's not a wireless provider allowed to bid for spectrum, and lo and behold, of course, they've got so much money, they got what they wanted. And so now they own a big chunk of prime spectrum, great for delivering cell phone service.
Yeah, so it's worth mentioning a little bit about spectrum auctions. You know, the broadcasters, radio and television, local radio and television stations, were given their frequency, and they were given a lot of broadcast spectrum. And then when the high definition came in, or was being brought in, they were given a second piece of spectrum. But on the telephone side, when we went to wireless cell phones, that technology, the government said, the public owns the airwaves. Now, let's not just give this away. It's worth billions of dollars. And by the way, we're running a budget deficit. So Congress tells the FCC, sell X amount of spectrum and book the revenue by October 15th so it makes next year's budget. And so they hold the auctions. They get billions of dollars up front. Some of these auctions, they get $7 billion. They get $5
billion. They get $55
billion. Is it that much?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So they're making money, and they're selling. They're giving away the spectrum for the next 10 years. I think these are mostly 10-year contracts. I don't think they're giving it away permanently. And so, but what's happened in the past is if they let somebody buy the spectrum that isn't going to use it, they sit on the spectrum, and then it doesn't get used. So they passed rules that say you can't just sit on Spectrum, and they, for a while, they passed them and said you have to be a telephone company to bid. You can't just be Walmart bidding on Spectrum and then speculate and then resell it.
Just, especially to keep somebody else from using it rather than use it.
Right. And so this was a breakthrough, but now they allowed Google in, and Google is diversifying.
Google is diversifying, and right now, of course, the most vehement opponents to open access being extended to the electromagnetic spectrum were the two biggest wireless providers, AT&T and Verizon.
What a surprise.
How about that? So now that Google won out on that one, they've entered into negotiations with the other two big providers, who are both smaller, and that's Sprint Nextel and T-Mobile. What they want to do is develop a partnership with these two companies where they replace the typical proprietary operating system of a cell phone. And by the way, that's something the cell phone providers guard jealously. They really want to keep it proprietary. They don't want to have it interoperate with other wireless providers and that kind of thing. They want to keep you as a customer. But Google wants to convince these two companies that it can provide a better operating system for a cell phone, and they call it G-Mobile. And the idea is that it's Unix-based, and those computer aficionados out there know that Unix is the operating system for mainframe computers, and coincidentally for Macs, that's what OS X is. And it makes it easier for third-party developers to develop software that may be incorporated by customers into their cell phone. And so it's a radical idea.
Right, because let's back up a little bit and say that in the world of cell phones, which have gotten computerized, the phone system has been computerized for a long time, it's totally proprietary, meaning that you can't just build software and expect it to work. And particularly in this issue of cell phones, the companies, one of the ways they keep you as a customer is they lock you into a 1 or 2 year contract, and they make you pay a fee if you want to opt out of it early. And they sell you a phone that doesn't work on someone else's system.
Right.
And so you may have a perfectly good cell phone from your last provider, and you say, why can't you just switch this over? And they say, well, it doesn't work. Well, they could easily have made these phones interoperable, and it'd just be a matter of software to change it, but they don't want to make it easy.
No, they go out of their way to keep that from happening.
And of course, there's a whole history, folks, in the computer industry. IBM, in the mainframe world, had proprietary systems, and that's how they got customers and then hung on to them. And of course, they were good at service and a variety of things. But the PC world shifted all of that in the computer industry. It meant that what we ended up with was a platform for PCs, the hardware platform, and then the Windows operating system. But it was possible for third-party vendors to create software that worked with Windows,
but only under conditions that were agreed to by Windows and by Microsoft. And as a matter of fact, we've seen that ability of Microsoft to set down the limits, you know, determine the limits and the conditions under which you can develop software for their operating system. That's been eroded, especially with this decision in Europe. But we're going to see Microsoft, its days as a purveyor of proprietary software over. It's shifting its business plan. But back to Google, the first thing you would notice with a Google operating system on your phone is that, lo and behold, what would the interface be? Looks just like the website. It's Google. And there are two things that Google's really good at. One of them is searching, okay? So that's the first thing you'd be able to do right off your cell phone.
Let me guess. The other thing they're good at is on holidays, they change the word Google into some nice drawing.
Yeah, they include some mistletoe and some silver.
Because I saw it at Halloween. It was wild for Halloween.
Oh, they do it. They do it for all kinds of occasions. But,
yeah.
But
I'm just kidding.
So what's the other thing that they're really good at?
I have no idea.
Advertising.
Advertising.
And this is the most radical part of the plan. This is the one that would affect consumers the most. It's really so radical, it could turn the whole cell phone industry upside down, as we've seen happen to the wireline phone industry. And it's this: Google delivers advertising. Their business plan for the future is you buy a phone. Once you bought a phone, you never pay another cent for your wireless access. And we all know how much we pay every month for our to use our cell phones. Under the Google Business Plan, you don't pay ever again, but you can't escape the advertising on your cell phone.
I don't know if I like this trade-off.
I don't know if I like it or not, but there are a lot of people who would willingly give up paying 50 or 60 or 80 or the whole family plan, who knows
kids,
what.
Kids would give it up, first of all.
Certainly they would, because they've grown up this way. They're used to it.
And they say, well, the ads don't affect me. As they drink their Coca-Cola and wear their Dr. Martens and
and have and wear advertising on their clothes all the time.
Exactly.
But now that's a really radical idea. And if they pull that off, there's just no telling what that would do to the cell phone industry as it's grown up. Of course, there are a number of obstacles to be overcome, and some people think it can't be done. But it's a great plan, and they're going to give it a whirl.
Well, two things occur to me about it. The first is related to it would break the iron grip that the current cell phone companies have, because we will look back in 5 years or so and think of how archaic the cell phone industry is. This idea that your phone can't be transferred. This idea, your number can be transferred, but your technology, you have to change your hardware if you change companies. Mm. This idea that you're locked into a contract. This idea that if you go over your minutes, they charge you 40 cents a minute when you go over your minutes for the month. That problem, those are marketing devices, and those will all go away over time here as the network is better able to handle more calls and all of that.
The interesting thing about it is that Google, the talks that they've had so far with T-Mobile and Sprint Nextel don't have anything to do with the spectrum they've already bought. So what we're looking at down the line is Google, which is not ready to do it right now, but they intend to enter the wireless market. And not only that, it could very well be that they will begin manufacturing their own hardware, in other words, their own cell phones under their name.
Don't you think it's also possible that they could use the spectrum as leverage to go to AT&T or Verizon and say, I want to sign a deal with you. You do the network, which you do so well, but you carry our advertising.
Well, you know, you're pretty dadgum smart, because that's what they've already done with Verizon. They enter into these talks with T-Mobile and Sprint Nextel, and the next thing you know, they're negotiating with Verizon to do that very thing. And of course, Apple tried that with Verizon, and Verizon wouldn't have anything to do with the iPhone. So we know that Apple eventually made a deal with AT&T. Well, iPhones are pretty popular. Verizon can see that. They also can see that Google's already negotiating with a couple of competitors, and so they're talking.
Yeah, interesting. Well, let's just spend a moment on the iPhone thing and bringing this up to date, because I've told my listeners before, if you're a regular listener, you know that when the iPhone came out, one of the disadvantages is the only cell phone service you could get on it was AT&T. And then some kid, within weeks, re-engineered his iPhone. He took it apart. He soldered some other connection, and he could use it on a different network.
Yeah.
And Apple sued him for opening up the thing and changing it. Is that not correct?
Actually, that's not quite correct. What happened was this kid was participating in a contest to see who could be the first to crack it and make it operate on another system. And I don't think that Apple was particularly concerned about it, but AT&T was.
Right.
They let the kid go by. They didn't really think about it, because the kid's workaround is something that hardly anybody can do. It involved taking it apart and soldering things inside the phone.
Right. Hardware changes.
A couple of days later, a guy in Ireland did it, and he did it solely through software.
Ooh.
He did it with his computer. He synced up his iPhone with his computer and altered the software. And of course, when you have a software patch, that's the kind of thing you can post anywhere and anybody can do it. Well, he did it, announced on the website that was sponsoring the contest that he'd done it, and at 3 o'clock that morning, lawyers from AT&T called him at home in the middle of the morning and said they better not see anything like a software patch for converting phones show up on the web, or he'd be in serious
danger. Where does that stand now?
That's where it stands. He was successfully intimidated, and he has not and will not release the software patch.
Oh, I'm amazed that didn't get out.
He owns a company that specializes in cell phone repair.
Interesting.
And for that matter, one of the things they do is alter other cell phones so that they will work on other people's networks. It's pretty big underground business, especially in Europe.
Well, Google has Google Video as well. It's a huge enterprise. And we've got YouTube Video out there, two of the biggest applications. Video is one of the biggest applications to come along that people did not see coming, along with personal posting websites like,
MySpace.
MySpace and Facebook. Yeah. And there's been this whole thing about incidental violations of copyright, that is, on these videos that get posted. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, you're going to fill us in, John, about copyright law as it applies to these incidental violations.
I'll be glad to.
Get your hands off that mouse. The Andy Finn Show will be right back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah! Ah.
Greetings, sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to The Andy Finn Show.
The smooth talk of the town.
Cool.
We are back on The Andy Finn Show, and I'm here with John Clark, a telecom professor at the University of Kentucky. So, John, Kentucky's 6-3, and they're still in the top 25, I think, in football.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, it's a good year for Kentucky football, even though they beat the number one team in the country.
LSU. Mm-hmm.
And then they lost to Florida in a
squeaker.
But
it was a good game. It was a really good
game. Oh, Florida used to trounce them.
Oh, gosh. 68-0.
Or was that the basketball team that Kentucky beat Florida? I forget. But anyway.
Well, Florida's a basketball powerhouse now, too.
Yeah, right. So Kentucky's in
already bowl eligible.
Amazing, because usually it's hard to take a football team from the doormat to a bowl team. But
they've only had one game that was a dog, and that was the last one, unfortunately.
Was that against the Georgia Bulldogs?
No, haven't played Georgia yet.
Anyway, let's move on to real issues in telecom. So you were telling me about this issue of copyright that has come up recently and what they're doing about it. So what happens is millions of videos get posted on YouTube and on Google Video, and people are violating copyright left and right.
Routinely.
Copyright and left. Something like that.
I think I know what you mean. One of the first popular genres that we saw on YouTube, for instance, especially among Asian kids, was to take a tune, and then you have two sprightly young girls or two young boys who peer into their webcams and make faces and dance around to the popular music of the day. Those were the first really popular videos.
Kind of like karaoke without having to do the singing.
Exactly. And, of course, those were very purposeful. They probably didn't know what they were doing, but certainly they were very purposeful, blatant violations of copyright law, because they take the whole tune, play it. You know, that's the whole point, was to have the music there. But what we've seen recently is incidental violation of copyright, and it turns out that consumers are fighting back against the record companies and against the movie industry, and actually having some success in fighting back.
So give us an example of an incidental violation, and then give us an example of why they need to fight back. That is, what have the record companies done to intimidate someone who's made an incidental violation?
Well, there was a really interesting case that I saw in the Washington Post a little over a week ago. And by the way, we do read the Washington Post in Kentucky. There's a young mom, and she's the proud parent of a 13-month-old toddler. The baby is standing up and walking around now, and she wants to capture it on video, and the baby loves music and loves to dance. So she puts on a tune. It happens to be a Prince song, Let's Go Crazy, which, by the way, is a great song. I love Prince. And she has 29 seconds of the baby bouncing up and down and dancing to the Prince song, and she posts a video of her baby on YouTube, and she gets a takedown order from Prince's record company at the time. Of course, we know that Prince has left record companies behind. But she gets a takedown order, and she thought that was an abuse of copyright law. For a big company like that to threaten a young mom who loves her baby.
She's threatening the baby, let's face it.
Well, the baby could be irrevocably scarred over the whole thing. But she sued the record company for unfair use or inappropriate use of copyright law, and is it in the way it stands right now is it hasn't been resolved. She has a lawsuit against that company.
Yeah, interesting. Well, let me ask you for some clarification. I've assumed that takedown, this is takedown the video, takedown rulings or letters would be direct, I mean, they're directed at individuals. Don't they tell Google Video and YouTube, take that, like when The Daily Show said they don't want all these segments from The Daily Show out on YouTube. Isn't it YouTube's responsible for taking them down?
It depends on the use. See, they're, of course, I'm sure you're aware of what fair use is, but just for your listeners' sake, the fair use doctrine says that there are some circumstances under which you can use portions or even a complete work, especially when it comes to a parody. There are conditions where you can use copyrighted work and you don't violate copyright laws. And a lot of the times it has to do with the percentage of the work that's used. But other times it has to do with the purpose for it. Education gets a buy in many ways.
Right, right.
And so YouTube's position is this is incidental violation of copyright law.
So they have refused to take them down?
They don't. They don't take them down. And so
So they send letters to the individuals.
So they send letters to the people who posted them.
I didn't know you could even find out who posted them. Does YouTube have to supply them with that information, or could I find out who she is?
Well, she may post with an email address that's familiar or something like that, or there may be some other recognizable aspect of it. In one instance, it didn't involve YouTube, but involved eBay. You have a mom-and-pop business, literally a mom-and-pop, a couple, who make a living sewing pillows and slip covers and selling them on eBay.
Right.
And it just so happens that the fabric they collect, and what they do is they use used fabric and clothes and things like that, and they make colorful collage-like slip covers and pillows. And it turns out that in some of the fabric they use, there are copyrighted images of maybe cartoon characters or something like that.
Right.
So they sell it on eBay, and they're getting cease and desist orders. The interesting thing about it is they have successfully taken on 15 giant corporations and won.
Yeah, I haven't read about this.
Yeah, saying that it's completely incidental use of your copyrighted image. Somebody already paid the license for it to go onto a T-shirt or
that's
whatever.
Right. That is right.
And we're using scraps. Yeah. So they've successfully defended their business 15 times, and they're now on their 16th lawsuit.
Interesting. Yeah.
And they've done it without representation, too.
Well, so it strikes me that on one level, on YouTube, if let's take The Daily Show as an example, right? Comedy Central's comedy fake news show. When people post segments from The Daily Show, it increases the circulation for The Daily Show. One argument about these videos is it can only help your business if people put it out there. Now, you could say, well, no, we want them to come to our website if they want to see The Daily Show because we can show them ads or something.
Well, part of what's going on here is that YouTube's got a time limit on what they'll post. You know, they can only do little segments.
Right.
I think there's a 5-minute limit or something like that. Nobody can post anything longer than that. So Comedy Central doesn't have to worry about somebody posting an entire Daily Show on it. And not only that, you've seen videos on YouTube, and they stream, right?
Right.
You can't download them. They stream, and quite frankly, the quality is terrible.
Well, it's a small screen version. You don't get a big screen.
Well, it's a small screen, and they don't come anywhere close to high res. Let's face it. You know, they have to keep the bandwidth. They have to keep the file sizes small so that they got the bandwidth to do what they do. So,
right.
I think it's beneficial in general for people to post little clips. It's just good publicity.
Yeah, and the other thing I'll say about copyright is this, and then we'll wrap this up probably because we don't need to go too deep into it, but copyright law is so different from patent law, right? So patents are inventions, and those only last, are they 20 years?
I think that's right. Yeah.
Right, and so you invent something that you can build, physically build and manufacture, and you get the rights to it for 20 years, whether it's a drug, you know, pharmaceutical product, or it's an automated something that performs some function. You get the rights for 20 years, and the principle of intellectual property, which is enshrined in our Constitution, is that you want the free flow of information and ideas in our society. So you don't want people to say, oh, I want to hold on to this information because I don't want to share it. I won't get compensated for it. So the founding fathers set up a system whereby people would freely share information because they could be assured they still owned it and would be compensated. But the principle was it's only for a limited time, and then it passes into the public domain because it's to the public good to have information that's freely available to all. Mm-hmm. So you go back to the works of Shakespeare or even the Gettysburg Address, and no one owns the rights to those. I can post the Gettysburg Address on my website or a picture of Abraham Lincoln, and no one owns the rights because it's well beyond copyright. Mm-hmm. But they've now extended copyright from the stuff they copyrighted in the beginning about the 1930s. Copyright goes back to Mickey Mouse and the movies. When the movies became talkies, copyrights extend back that far. And every time they come near passing into the public domain, the companies like Disney go to Congress and get a 20-year extension passed. So we're well past the time when Disney's been well compensated by Mickey Mouse. It's about time for Mickey to pass into the public domain so little kids or anybody could put Mickey Mouse on their website and not have to pay a royalty. But Disney will be going for another 20-year extension here.
Yeah, I think what you mean is the idea of copyright extension originates in the 30s with Disney because copyright's been around longer than that. But yeah, that's when we started seeing copyright extended further and further, and you know, who knows how far down the road.
Yeah, it went from 57 years to 75 years, and then or 78 years, now it's 98 years, I think, or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure the latest.
78, it's 78.
It's 78, right?
It's up to 78 years. And this is, anyway, we don't need to go further into copyright, but I that's a bug for me because it's ultimately, after a certain amount of time, they've reaped their money from it. They've been fairly compensated. And then information is supposed to pass into the public domain where everyone can use
it. And the original artist is dead. And his or her heirs are extending the copyright.
Well, even the most of this is now owned by corporations.
Right.
It's not even the individual. But anyway, without going any further into it, it'll be interesting to see. But I hope that these incidental violations don't go too far.
Well, let me give you one more interesting example. I don't know exactly how much more time we have, but this will be brief. There's a guy named Rick Silver whose fame is based on the fact that he was the choreographer. Sorry about that.
It's not like you.
It isn't like me. He's the choreographer for Boy, My Daughter Would Just Kick My Butt for That.
Jeez. The choreographer for Boy, My Daughter Would Just Kick My Butt for That? I haven't seen that.
I just realized, I hope my daughter, Mary Celeste, the dancer, doesn't ever hear that.
Well, we could cut this out.
But she,
by the time we put it on the web.
She never listens to your show anyway.
What?
But
Mary Celeste.
Rick Silver's known for choreographing the electric slide. Now, how many weddings do you suppose the whole assembled group has done the electric slide at the wedding reception?
Too many.
He spent 3 years issuing 17,000 separate takedown notices for every video he found of a wedding reception or a bar mitzvah or whatever where they were doing the electric slide in the video. Finally, it was too big a task for him. He gave up, and now he's devoting his life to just making people take down videos where they're not doing it right.
I think that's hilarious.
Yeah. That makes more sense. If they're going to post the video, at least get the steps right.
Yeah, right. Interesting. Well, that will do it for another edition of the Andy Finn Show. John, it's great to have you here in Virginia for this one.
Thanks very much.
And a good discussion of a variety of issues in technology. So next week, we'll be back to bashing the Bush administration, but for this week, we're sticking to technology, folks. So that'll do it for another edition of the Andy Finn Show. You can go to my website, andyfinn.us, to read my blog and writings and to hear previous shows. That's andyfinn.us. And until next Monday night, remember, do it. Don't doubt it.